Some grow nuts, some grow leaves. Either way you look at it, we're talking trees with John Eisenhower on Rosie on the House.
You know, I just had a random thought here, John, as we were coming back onto the air. What do you do with your equipment? I've got a pair of pruners that, man, if I leave outside for 1 minute and they get one drop of rain, it instantly starts to rust, and I got to get out there and a little sandpaper and I'm oiling it up. How often do you go through pruners and a saw?
Well, yeah, we really put our equipment through the paces in a typical work week. You know, when we have our guys, you know, using them literally all day long, we go through, you know, handsaw blades like they're going out of style, and
like a carpenter goes through razor blade knives.
Yeah, we have you know, there's some really good carbide sharpeners, little hand sharpeners for doing your sharpening your hand pruners, and yeah, we don't do a lot of special treatment of oiling and honing our blades a lot. You know, we just
you wear them out too fast.
Almost, you know. And you know, the ones that we have, we like to put an edge on them every now and then, because it's sure nice to have a good quality, you know, a nice pair of hand pruners. We spend a little bit of extra money on some of the better quality ones. You can buy these cheaper ones at your local store, that, you know, really cheap ones, like under $10 a pair, and you get what you pay for. Good pruners, you know, are going to cost you $20, $25 minimum. And you can pay up to, you know, $50, $7,500 for a really nice pair, some that are just really the parts are just really nice, just adjusted beautifully.
My curious nature just hit that as I'm thinking through all these talking tree points and thinking through what I've got to go home and do and thinking about my saw and how I'm mad I left it out and got rained on. But back to get on point, we better cover mesquite trees for everyone that is expecting to learn about mesquites today, that's following our home maintenance calendar.
Yeah, I want to talk. There are a lot of mesquites that grow here in the low desert. We have our Chilean mesquite, which is from Chile, of course. It's a thornless, fast-growing, beautiful mesquite tree. It's a hybrid cultivar that's really, it's kind of a mesquite on steroids. They can grow really, really fast. Got to be kind of ready for them, kind of like the hybrid Palo Verdes. There's an Argentine mesquite that has some wicked thorns. They can be up to 3 or 4 inches in length and extremely sharp and rigid. And, I mean, our guys ask for hazard pay when they have to trim those things. They're just, like, really rough to climb in those. And then we have screw bean mesquites. Occasionally you'll see those here in the valley, and they're really, really common in southern Arizona. But we have our desert mesquite, our velvet mesquite, Prosopis velutina, is our tree of the month, and it's amazing. It's the one that grows locally in our desert washes. You'll see it all over our Sonoran desert. I love it. I was in a neighborhood today where there's a bosque of mesquites. It's a mesquite bosque. It's the original mesquites that were in that wash 50 years ago, and here they are just running through this property, and they're just amazing. They're really awesome trees. They grow a little more slowly than some of the Chilean and the Argentine. Smaller thorns, but they just are a very durable tree. Grow pretty tall. They can get up to be 40 feet tall at maturity. And they're, I think, just one of our, it's kind of my favorite desert tree. When people ask me, what's your favorite tree, I'd have to say that velvet mesquite is at top of my list. And they're, as opposed to the hybrids and these other Chilean and Argentines, they grow a little more slowly, have really solid angles of attachment. Some of these other faster-growing mesquites, although they achieve their landscape purpose more quickly, they fall apart as well more quickly. They have, you know, weak angles of attachment and get so big and so heavy that they end up losing a lot of branches. So for that reason, I when people are asking my recommendations for mesquites, as much as I like Chilean mesquites because they don't have thorns, I really ask them to look long and hard at that velvet mesquite as an option.
It doesn't outgrow the ability. It doesn't outgrow how fast it can support itself.
Exactly. Yeah. and that it hasn't been hybridized, you know, to the point that it's, you know, or cultivated for long internodal growth and some of these other techniques that have been used to try to get these extremely fast-growing trees. It's just a little slower, like a lot of other trees. If the tree grows more slowly, putting wood on more slowly, they tend to be a tighter grained tree, stronger internally than a tree that's putting on wood quickly, and less litter as a result. You know, trees are putting on their foliage more slowly. They're dropping it more slowly. So I like, for that reason, I love Texas live oaks, because they are a little slower getting established in the landscape, but they're like, there's like no litter. There's no cleanup. They just have they kind of keep to their space. And so if you want a fast growing tree, just realize that the caveat is that you're going to have a higher litter producing tree, a tree that you're going to have to keep up with in terms of maintenance, because it's going to sometimes get ahead of you on that curve, and you'll
probably won't live as long.
And and structurally, some of these are growing so fast that they outgrow their architectural strength to support themselves. So you have to have intervention in terms of pruning to keep them contained and within bounds. And that's not a good situation. I mean, as a professional who's pruning trees every week, I see these things. I see these trees falling apart. I see the branch failure. I see this. And despite our best efforts, we have to really work hard to get these trees under control sometimes. And that's, you know, if you can start with a good choice in terms of tree selection, to find a tree that's not going to be giving you those sort of headaches, hey, why not go that direction first and then not have to be playing catch up?
And it takes a lot of time, surprisingly enough, to find some of these local natives from the nurseries. You know, they sell what's popular and they sell what they can make a profit. And a lot of times, if you're looking for these true ones, you've got to go through like an arid zone and find out who they're distributing to that are growing these native Southwest trees for those real,
but they are, yeah,
zero escape properties.
Sure.
They exist and they're out there, but it's not something you generally walk into a big box store and find sitting there on the shelf.
Right. But, you know, calling around and call some of the professionals who have connections in the nursery industry, like ourselves, and ask, and we can get you do the extra research. It's worth the effort to try to find that better quality tree that's going to last longer in the landscape.
So squeezing two trees in 1 month and one Talking Trees broadcast in 1 hour, we've got we're running out of time here to cover the rest of our talking points. So let's hit soil and tissue sampling. That is something that I don't know, is that a relatively new practice, or is it just becoming where more people are doing it, that it's becoming more mainstream?
Well, good quality companies, you know, will not prescribe, you know, fertilization treatments until they've diagnosed that there's a need for it. You know, the ANSI standards recommend that, the old saying is diagnosis, you know, prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. And it really is. If you're, you know, just throwing fertilizer out haphazardly onto the landscape, almost all of our fertilizers are salt-based, so we're increasing the salinity in our soil by throwing fertilizer down. There has to be a real need for those fertilizer products to be applied. So soil sampling is just kind of a baseline. We love to be able to go to a property for the first time, visit it, and take a couple of random soil samples from different parts of the yard. We take them in for a simple soil sample. It's not very expensive. We send it out to a local laboratory for analysis. We get back our macro and micronutrient levels. We have our calcium to magnesium levels. We have our soil pH. We can get a really quick look at what those plants might need, and it's a really nice to then be able to tailor a fertilizer program specifically for that property. Also, we've been doing a lot of tissue analysis for Texas root rot, for instance. Just recently, I've come across several trees that died this last summer due to Texas root rot. Well, before a cut, we're going to take those trees down, but before the customers replant in that spot, we highly recommend doing a tissue sample of the roots that were left behind, and we'll send those in again for analysis, and they'll confirm or disconfirm the presence of Texas root rot. If there are, then we're going to have to put in a non-susceptible plant back into that location so that it won't have any problems like the tree that died. Just I thought I'd mention it because we offer a host of these services, and I think a lot of I was thinking some of our listeners might be able to use some of these services and have us come in and do these evaluations before you're wanting to do these other treatments and spray chemical applications.
You never realize the emotional connection you have with the tree until you have to remove it, whether it's Texas root rot, whether it's just old, or you've got root heaving a portion of your home that it has to be removed to keep the home from being damaged. So it can be, placing and planting that new tree and taking the time to do soil testing and taking the time to do your proper watering for whatever type of soil you go into. It's a lot of work, but if it makes it last 20 years longer that you can enjoy that tree, the extra shade coverage you get on your home,
all the other benefits,
the landscape functionality that it's designed to put there for, when all those things work together, that's a very enjoyable environment you've created for your own yard.
Sure. Yeah, it's really an emotional thing when some of our customers have had to take out trees they've lived with for many years, and they've contributed a lot of benefits to the landscape. And then they, like this recent big pine tree that died with due to Texas root rot. It's really sad because the gentleman just purchased the home recently, and for in large part because of that big tree that was in the backyard, but Texas root rot took it down. And before he plants back in that location, we thought, you really need to get a soil test. And there is a short list of non-susceptible trees that we can put back in the place of trees that died from Texas root rot. And we're going to hook him up and make sure that gets done.
And what's the green team?
Well, at Integrity Tree Service, several months ago, actually about a year ago, this month in December, we started a green team at Integrity to find ways to minimize our carbon footprint and find ways to employ practices and purchase products that have a less impact on our natural environment. And we just have come up with this team in order to brainstorm and find ideas how we as a company can do better in terms of our living a little more sustainably.
When we come back, our final talking point is the difference between compost and wood chips. Not the same thing, not the same function, but often one's used in place of the other. Just maybe it's what we have on hand, maybe we're cutting a shortcut, or maybe we didn't realize the difference in the purpose of using a chipping product versus a composting product.